Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mbuga.
Every day, medical staff say about 70 female survivors of sexual assault visit the six MSF health facilities in camps near Goma.
Aid agencies warn of a rapidly deteriorating security situation and a humanitarian crisis in eastern DRC.
The reaction of people here is that they think what is happening is an unlawful amendment of the constitution. That's because the constitution we have right now provide for the means to change or amend constitution, and this way is not followed.
In Togo, civil society and religious groups urge President Farah Nasimbe not to sign a new parliamentary measure into law that would allow parliament to choose the next president.
This has been the case, I think, about 4 or 5 weeks ago. They introduced the procedure that parliament was going to follow that was supposed to be discussed. I was there in the room and a fistfight started because without distributing the rules that were going to govern the process.
And Somalia's federal constitution is approved by a parliamentary vote. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. War is approaching the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's Goma City, and the region is at a breaking point. That's according to activists and aid workers as the United Nations sounds an alarm over the situation in the Central African country. Bintou Keita, the head of the UN's DRC peacekeeping mission, popularly known as MONUSCO, told the UN Security Council this week that the region could face a rapidly deteriorating security situation and humanitarian crisis reaching near catastrophic levels. Heavy fighting between the Congolese army and the armed group M23 has intensified in the eastern part of the country since February, forcing hundreds of thousands of civilians to flee their homes as the rebels make territorial gains. For more on the current situation in the eastern DRC, I reached Father Jean-Claude Atsemeso, the CEO and President of Congo Minerals USA and founder of Jatukik Providence Foundation as part of his effort to revitalize and strengthen the war-torn Democratic Republic of Congo.
What is happening there there is a lot of movement of populations because the war is intense. The Congolese government is decided to take the different villages back. And because of that, also those M23 is trying to stay and also gain more villages. The people cannot stay in their village. They are moving out. And because they are moving out, their situation is becoming difficult because they don't have place to stay. They don't have food. And the humanitarian situation is very critical.
As the war approaches the big city of Goma, and you mentioned a lot of displaced people, how are they coping? Is the government and other agencies doing enough to help those who are displaced?
I cannot say that they are doing enough. I can say they are doing something, but it's not enough for all these people who have been moved from the different villages and who are in Goma. I know that the government is doing something. The Catholic Church and some humanitarian organizations are doing something, but I don't believe that is enough.
And we are getting reports of situations that arise from such a displacement, like diseases, mental health issues. Are you hearing about the same too?
Yes, that definitely because the people who are moving like that, they don't have water, they don't have the good quality of life. And it's normal that they face all kind of disease and lack of clean water and everything.
And from the look of things, is Goma under threat at the moment? Because the rebels seem to have been moving closer to the city.
No, it's not true because they have been saying it for now more than 9 months that they have been saying that they're going to be taking Goma. It's not true because what they have been doing, they have been sending spy inside of Goma. and they put a lot of money to corrupt different soldiers, officials of the Congolese army. But the reality is that the Congolese army is getting a new reform, and the Congolese army is rising, and I don't think that they may even be able to get Goma. It's not true. The international community, you know, the international community knows what's going on. They know that the natural resources of Congo are very, very important to them. Instead of them going to Congolese government saying, let us do the win-win like deal, but they are trying to get it by force. That's why we have what we have. And let them understand that God exists. And with God's power, even though they are more powerful than God, according to them, but God one day will show them that he's the one who created everything.
That's Father Jean-Claude Atsemeso, the CEO and President of Congo Minerals, USM. He spoke with me from Virginia here in the U.S. Meanwhile, in the eastern part of that country, there are about 800,000 people living in refugee camps near the city of Goma. Medical officials working there say many are suffering from mental health issues. The medical group Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is doing what they can to help. VOA's Zanem Net Zaidi reports.
At Shabindu Camp outside Goma, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, has set up tents where dozens of displaced persons are being processed. They can also participate in listening sessions with psychologists. Rose has been receiving care for depression. She blames the war for her mental state, but says her journey to recovery has begun.
When someone flees war, they are very disturbed, and that was my case too. But here we have been taught how to forget everything we've left behind and how to calm our thoughts.
Rose is not alone. According to MSF, living in camps around Goma is a challenging environment for the hundreds of thousands of displaced people, especially women. Every day, medical staff say about 70 female survivors of sexual assault visit the six MSF health facilities in camps near Goma. Faustin Hakizimana is a head of Bulengo camp. He says the need for psychosocial support is more urgent than ever.
When we looked into the real problem, we found out that many have been disturbed by the horrors of war, and others have been raped when they look for wood in the forests, which is why so many women here suffer of mental illness.
Gerlas Mulekia, a clinical psychologist with Médecins Sans Frontières at the Lushagala camp, says more help is needed.
Most of the people we see show signs of anxiety and post-traumatic problems. We run three group sessions a day, and each group is made up of 10 people, for a total of 30 people a day. If it goes on like this, we'll need to expand the activities to try and meet as many of the needs as possible.
Psychosocial care is available to both genders, but officials say most of the people taking advantage of the services are women whose mental health challenges are impacting their ability to care for their children. Zanem Neti Zaidi, VOA News, Goma.
In Togo, civil society and religious groups are calling on President Faure Gnassingbé not to sign any parliamentary measure into law. The controversial legislation amends the constitution to allow parliament to choose the next president. But opposition groups condemn the move, saying it appears to be a calculated attempt to extend the president's stay in power. They warn that the country could be plunged into instability if the measure becomes law. Jean Yovi Degli is a human rights lawyer, a former minister, and leader of Build Togo, a civil society group. He tells VOA's Peter Kilote that the lawmakers did not follow the procedures laid out by the constitution, which he says calls for a referendum, among other steps, before an amendment is passed.
The reaction of people here is that they think what is happening is an unlawful amendment of the constitution, first because the constitution we have right now provide for the means to change or amend constitution, and this way is not followed. Second, it is the way of referendum that can change completely the constitution and the regime. This path also is not followed by a parliamentarian, and the parliamentarian are normally at the end of their term since December 2023. They cannot decide to amend the constitution because they don't have normally this power anymore. Unfortunately, this is what happened, and people are not happy at all.
Some religious groups and some civil society groups are calling on the president not to sign this amendment passed in parliament. Do you foresee this happening? Is the president going to listen to them from where you stand?
I cannot tell you what the president is going to do, but according to the comments I'm hearing here, I don't think that there will be a positive issue regarding the position of the church leaders. I think they are playing their role, but I don't think that there will be a positive reply or positive answer to their request. Unfortunately, this is what it is.
The opposition, I understand, fears that this could become another avenue for President Paul Nyasengbe to extend his grip on power, for him to stay in power for a long time to come. Do you think their fears are legitimate?
Yes, this fear is legitimate because, you know, parliamentarian regime, you don't have a limitation of terms. You don't have. You can run as long as you can have a majority in parliament. You can run. This system is in Israel, England, which is the country of birth of this regime. We have it in Germany. You don't have, like in a presidential regime, a limitation to 2 terms. So it is clear that as long as a party can have majority in a parliament, its leader can run for the position of chief of government, of chief of executive for all the time.
Some people are saying the situation is tensed at the moment. What do you think can be done to bring down the temperature politically?
Currently, something is happening that could have happened before the changing of the constitution. Is a discussion that one of the members of the regime has called. Myself, I was supposed to be there. Unfortunately, I have my child who went to hospital this morning, so I could not be there to discuss. This discussion could have been held before the amendment of the constitution so that the regime or people can explain to the population that this is the reason why we want to change the constitution. This is what the new constitution is about. But unfortunately, once again, the right path was not followed. I think that maybe this decision can cool down the situation a little bit. But at the end of the day, as far as the amendment was adopted already, and that this text will be promulgated by the president, definitely there will be tension between the politician and the population and our leaders.
Jean Niovi Digley, a human rights lawyer, a former minister and leader of a civil society group, Build Togo, speaking with my colleague Peter Clote. Somalia's bicameral federal parliament voted Saturday to approve the country's federal constitution after years of controversy and delays. Despite parliamentary approval, though, the constitution still requires a public referendum to complete Somalia's transition to a permanent constitutional democracy. Analysts say the vote marks a crucial milestone, but challenges remain in unifying the nation around the new constitutional order. The move has generated strong opposition from some political players in the East African nation. Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. I reached him earlier for his take on this development.
The speaker of the lower house of parliament who is managing this appears to be absolutely committed to make sure that the president's desires are reflected in the constitution. This has been the case, I think, about 4 or 5 weeks ago. They introduced the procedure that parliament was going to follow that was supposed to be discussed. I was there in the room and a fistfight started because without distributing the rules that were going to govern the process, the speaker of the lower house decided to claim that it has been approved.
One issue that has many human rights organizations complaining is the efforts to weaken constitutional protections for children, especially girls. Are you concerned about that?
I'm concerned about any reduction on the protections of any human beings in our country. That's only one of them. Others include that Parliament itself will be emasculated such that it will not have the authority to control and make the government accountable to itself, or that's the ministers and the cabinet. In this new version of the constitution, or this new constitution, the president will have the authority to select and fire the prime minister, and the president will not be a sort of elected by parliament, as has been the case in the history of the country in the last 6 years. So parliament is being asked to sort of throw away its powers and give it to the president. And I think that's a major danger for the country.
Why was there a need even to think of this? Because the current constitution, I think, was regarded as adequate for a constitutional independent state, democratic, and a country that values multi-party system and public justice.
I think there is a tendency, not only in Somalia, but in many parts of the African continent, if I may be so brave to say that, since I have worked and traveled in many parts of our continent, is the leadership, the presidency always likes to have a vast proportion of the authority in the constitution. And so the current president is no different in that regard. He wants to bolster his capacity to do whatever he wants without any parliamentary control. And that means the country is marching towards a dictatorship, which was the original sin in the country that destroyed Somalia nearly 33 years ago. And so that's the biggest worry that the general public has. That's the biggest worry that many parliamentarians have. But the president and the speaker have decided that hell or high water, they are going to run with this. And the tragedy is that they're not going to take this anywhere because the governors in the regions, many of them are not happy with this. So it's an unnecessary project. It destabilizes the country rather than working towards an era where the population in the country, the people of Somalia, will elect parliamentarians rather than small groups, where the president will be sort of a head of state, as has been the case, and that the prime minister and the cabinet are the executive authority of the country. So that kind of checks and balances is what this president is running away from.
That's Abdi Ismail Samata, a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He spoke with me from Somali capital Mogadishu. In Uganda, a leading anti-corruption campaigner is calling on Muhoozi Kainerugaba, the new chief of defense forces, to implement measures to root out corruption in the East African country. Marion Agaba also says Kainerugaba, the son of President Yoweri Museveni, has yet to demonstrate his credentials in the fight against financial malfeasance and mismanagement. His comments come after Kainerugaba vowed to improve the living conditions of soldiers by combating the evil of corruption and mismanagement of resources. However, critics say the son of the president is not likely to succeed because President Museveni, they contend, has not ended corruption after over 38 years in power. Marlon Agaba tells VOA's Peter Klotem that the son of the president should be given the benefit of doubt as he prepares to lead the fight against financial malfeasance and wrongdoing.
It's not the first time that we're hearing that. When the first son was celebrating his birthday, I think like 2 years ago, the father, the president, Yoweri Museveni, said that that for him, he had been patient with the corrupt, but that the son would fight corruption. So it's not the first time this is coming up, but what we need to know probably is the track record of General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, because he's not new to the army. He has been a commander of the Special Forces Command. He has been a commander of land forces. And there is no evidence right now of these units he has commanded being different. And Muhoozi has been in the military over time when several scandals of corruption have come up from the army. So he has said that, but there is no evidence to show that, and has been a serving officer, has been in different offices where at least he should have shown his capabilities to fight corruption. But maybe I think what I can say at this time is that let's give him the benefit of doubt and see whether he can do anything differently.
As an anti-corruption crusader in Uganda, what would you expect he implement in the fight against corruption, particularly in the military?
Of course, the military is not isolated from the general context of the country, the political economic context of the country. But again, there are things that he can do to change that. I think one, of course, the digitalization is quite important. Digitalization of the military. There have been several instances of ghost soldiers in the army, money being lost through non-existent soldiers. I think he can work towards that, streamlining the recruitment and the personnel management in the military. That is also quite important, as well as the procurements, because we have also had scandals in procurement of uniforms, procurement of helicopters. That is also quite important. But of course, if he's to succeed, his greatest success will be tested if he can rein on the other military officers who have, of course, been engaging in corruption. If he can really rein in them, I think that will be his success. Because even recently, the president came out quite clearly, and he said that there is corruption in the army. When recently our forces were attacked in Somalia, the president said that partly it was because of corruption in the army, people who are not qualified being sent as commanders, and then we saw what happened when our forces were attacked in Somalia.
Marlon, if for 38 years President Museveni is not being given credit as effectively fighting corruption in Uganda, what can Muhoozi Kainerugaba do in the fight against corruption in Uganda that could be replicated in civilian life?
One, I think President Museveni, when he came as part of his 10-point program, when he was a guerrilla leader from 1981 to 1986, one of his 10-point program was fighting corruption. So in terms of ideology, he really wanted to fight corruption. And when he came in, he really tried to do that, setting up the Inspectorate of Government and several other agencies to fight corruption. But midway, he really lost it. And right now, we are at a point where there is no return, where I don't think that there's anything much really can do to change that. Muhoozi Kainerugaba has a very good chance to change course. Because one, he personally hasn't been implicated in any scandal. Unlike the father or any other, hasn't been implicated in any corruption scandal. He has had so far, at least in the public light, a clean record. And I think if he says that he can fight corruption, I have some hope in him that he can fight it, because at least he has a very clean record, and there are things that he can do within his influence that can really help.
What are the expectations of anti-corruption campaigners like yourself in this commitment that he has made to fighting corruption and mismanagement?
We are good at making recommendations. We are good at rhetoric. The president has said several days that he's going to fight corruption. He's going to crush the corrupt. We have so many laws. We have institutions. We are very good at talking. We want to see action from Muhoozi Kainerugaba. We really want to see action. If you can start by arresting the officers who have been implicated in several scandals, if you can start by putting systems in order, we really want to see action. If you can start by recovering what has been lost through corruption. We really want to see action, and that's when we shall believe him that he's really committed to fighting corruption.
That's Marlon Agaba, Ugandan anti-corruption campaigner, speaking from Kampala with my colleague Peter Klote. An initiative by a youth group in Burkina Faso seeks to promote peace, unity and tolerance between Muslims and Christians during Ramadan and Easter season. Lamine Traore reports from Ouagadougou and Grace Oyenubi narrates.
It's a few minutes past 6 p.m. The imam's invocation marks the break of the Muslim fast for the day. Muslims are joined by Catholics, Protestants and traditional leaders to enjoy the iftar meal. A youth group organized a communal event to bring together Muslims during the month of Ramadan, when Muslims fast every day from dawn to sunset, and Lent, a period of 40 days during which many Christians remember the events leading up to and including the death of Jesus Christ. The community thus suspends all religious barriers. The youth group promotes the concept of practicing one's faith while respecting that of others. Abdul Kader and Nicole welcome the initiative.
I decided to come to this collective event because it's very interesting. Christians, Muslims, we're all the same. Before talking about religion, we need to advocate living together.
It's a great initiative. I'm really pleased. It's my first time taking part, but it really had to be done.
Amos Zong Naba, a Protestant Christian, would like to see more of this.
We know that there are several religious denominations here and they live in perfect harmony. It's important for Burkina Bay to be able to stick together, and it's important to have these kinds of initiatives.
Mahamadi Ouadraogo believed that the people of Burkina can continue to coexist peacefully despite their religious diversity.
The idea is really to get together beyond our differences, our religious affiliations, and say we are Burkina Bay. Burkina is our country. We are a family. Let's stay together, hand in hand. We are Burkina Bay before we are religious. Burkina is our country. It is the country that carries us.
At least 1,000 people took part in this communal iftar. According to the organizers, the event, which is only in its second year, will continue being held in the coming years. For Lamine Traore in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, Grace Oyenubi, VOA News.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first, two female entrepreneurs in Mozambique have started businesses that help fight climate change and reduce pollution. Amelia Sgule has this story from the capital, Maputo. Michelle Joseph narrates.
Vanya Lazaro likes to add a new plant to her garden whenever possible. Over the past 6 months, she has been testing a new fertilizer on her flower and vegetable beds at her home in Maputo, Mozambique. She says that thanks to the product called Ntoko Organic, her plants are healthier. Lazaro says they use Ntoko Organic products in the garden because they are biodegradable and free of chemicals, ensuring her household will consume healthier food. After a few unsuccessful projects, Mozambican entrepreneur Marcia Dimajone founded Ntoko Organic. She says it was during a business competition that she realized that she could produce fertilizer from organic waste, such as dried leaves, vegetables, and fruit. Ntoko Organic collects its fertilizer-making ingredients from the community itself. Dima Joan says her company distributes buckets to people's homes along with labels indicating the types of materials they can put inside them. The approach ensures the quality of raw materials. Dima Joan isn't the only woman operating a green business in Mozambique. Nearly 5 years ago, Karina Jamal founded Cocoa Boxes, a startup that supplies biodegradable and environmentally friendly packaging and paper bags. Jamal says she wanted to create a solid business while inspiring other women. Jamal says that she always wanted to leave a footprint in the world that would inspire not only women, but also her daughter. She says she hopes someday her daughter will be able to say that her mother fought hard, not only to be a successful entrepreneur, but to do something beautiful for the environment. Jamal and Dima Joan are helping reduce environmental pollution and build a sustainable future for all Mozambicans. They both encourage women to take a chance on something they believe in. Jamal says a lot of people are afraid to take risks, but that living in your comfort zone isn't the best thing in the world either.
Project Green Woman.
Dima Joan says that they train young women so they can create their own green businesses and become agents of change in their localities. Then these women can have financial autonomy. According to the World Bank, only about 25% of all businesses in Mozambique are run by women, a percentage these women say needs to grow. For Amarilis Goulet in Maputo, Mozambique, is Michelle Joseph, VOA News.
According to a study by the Cooperative Children's Book Center, only 12% of U.S. children's books featured a black main character, with just 7.6% authored by black writers. These statistics inspired retired Nigerian engineer and storyteller Oluyemi Falomo and his daughter Mo Falomo to start an independent children's publishing house known as Fall House Publishing. The original plan was to release Oluyemi Falomo's first children's book, The Princess and the God, based on a story he had told his son more than 30 years prior. But as the father-daughter duo tell VOA's Jackson Mufunganyi, that mission expanded as they now intend to publish more black-authored storybooks as a way of enhancing representation in children's literature and creating diverse characters for mostly first-generation African-Americans.
The first manuscript came out in 1993.
Oh, wow. But it's over 30 years ago.
It's been waiting until
this
when
year.
My daughter, Mo,
yeah.
encourage us.
She pushed you a little bit.
Yes, it pushed me. Mm. It was in a particular circumstance. I was recovering from COVID.
Okay.
And so these unfinished businesses now.
So Mo came and told you, Daddy, there are so many things that you need to do. This one is the one project that you really have to finish. Is that how you got on board?
I won't. Kind of, but not really. So the thing is, he's kind of had this book where he wanted to publish it, but it's like just a manuscript. And for him, one of his things that he's been saying, oh, I really want to do this. When I retire, I'm going to do this. And then at the cusp of retirement was when he was ill with COVID and he was hospitalized for months. So I kind of saw this as an opportunity to get him active and things that we could do together. And that's kind of how the process started. But then I took it on to find the illustrator to make sure that the story appealed to children, his grandkids who are born
in America.
2018, yeah. 20, like kids who are born now, being able to see themselves in the imagery and also speaking to the times and making sure that the story shows a range of what blackness looks like. The story shows men and women in authority. The story has morphed a little bit, but it still has the essence of kindness and compassion and sacrifice, which was very important for him, and respect.
And from there, you started a publishing house. It is not just this. Now it has become something bigger than, or larger than. The mission is not just to publish the one
book,
The Princess and the God.
That is true. And see, doing research, looking into how can we actually get my dad's book published, we realized that a lot of books that are written by black, about black children, so children's books that are essentially black main characters, are oftentimes not written by black authors. And so just looking at the research, I think it was like the Cooperative Book Center in 2020, their research was showing that only 12% of black children's books that are bestsellers have main black characters. And of that 12%, only, I think it's about
7%. Yeah.
Exactly, 7%, 6.7 or something.
By black authors.
By black authors. Yeah. And I feel like that, we want to be the ones to tell our stories. Mm-hmm. We want to highlight the beauty of Africa. We want to highlight our culture. We want to show you the moments in our culture that are important to us. We want you to celebrate our culture along with us. But if we're not telling our stories, right, we don't really get that opportunity. And the landscape of how storytelling exists within Africa is changing. We don't have grandparents that we can kind of just hang out with for hours.
Yes.
And listen to their wives' tales and listen to their moments of wisdom. So
and even though you did hang out with them, you'd probably be on your phone watching. You know,
well, you know, right? Now we want our girlfriends on TikTok.
Absolutely. That's another platform, another medium of storytelling.
Another medium.
But, you know, so this book was born out of your father's interaction with your older brother. Mm-hmm. What kind of stories did your father tell you?
I mean, he told me this story as well. I would say a lot of it, so my dad and I do a lot of math together. And that's something that he's passionate about. But in terms of growing up, the stories that my dad told me were stories that highlighted values, what our morals are, the version that he highlights within himself that he also wants us to emulate. You know, making it important for us to know that it's important to work hard. And when you work hard, there are rewards for hard work. Making sure that we understand the value of like respecting elders within our culture. Mm. Making sure that we even speak our language, right? Those are the things that, and education as a whole, those are the values that my father instilled within me. And he used some storytelling, some emulation within just looking at his life and just how he lived his life to actually tell us.
Nigerian engineer and storyteller Oluyemi Falomi and his daughter Mo Falomo speaking with my colleague Jackson Mfunganyi. Sierra Leone soccer legend Lamine Bangura has died from injuries sustained in a road accident on Tuesday night in the West African nation. Bangura was 59. VOA's David Vandy has the story.
Sierra Leone soccer legend Lamine Bangura has died from injuries sustained in a road accident on Tuesday night in the West African nation. The accident took place at a village called Contaline in Sierra Leone. The former Leonsters soccer star Lamine Bangura was 59 years old. Lamine Bangura was the head coach of the Sierra Leone Ports Authority Football Club, who were traveling to the eastern city of Kenema for a Sierra Leone Premier League fixture when their bus collided with a stationary truck on Tuesday, March 24th. Junior Fodi, an ex-soccer player for Sierra Leone, played along Lamine Bangura in their days. He spoke to me from Sweden.
His demise was shocked to all of us, because I've been like following the league in Sierra Leone. Even the last Saturday, I saw him, his team played against Ole Odians, and I saw him heal and well. He was there. So for us to have the news on Tuesday that he has passed away was a shock. And even not now, I'm still in the shock.
What would you say Mr. Lamine Bangura was like when you guys were playing together? What kind of person was him?
Lamine, his personality was unique. He had this upline stuff that he came from Kono to Freetown to play in the national team. When some of us are invited to a national team, these are the people that, you know, come to our aid, give us advices, you know, make us to feel at home.
He was like a big brother.
Yeah, yeah. it's a big loss. It's a big loss to the whole nation. You know, that's why you see yesterday the whole Freetown almost turned up to give him a befitting farewell.
Bangura, a legend loved by Sierra Leoneans across the country, was rushed to her hospital in Freetown, but could not make it as he passed away in the early hours of Wednesday, leaving the football community in mourning. The accident also left six players injured, some critically, as they were transported to Freetown for medical treatment. Lamine Bangura would be remembered for his contributions on and off the field. He played a pivotal role in Sierra Leone's qualification for the 1994 and 1996 African Cup of Nations. He transformed from a player into a coach, guiding AS Kaloun in the Guinea-Conakry Soccer League to glory and clinching consecutive Sierra Leone Premier League trophies. Lamine Bangura's illustrious career as both player and coach was celebrated in a final farewell on Friday as he was laid to rest, leaving behind a profound legacy that transcends the boundaries of the beautiful game. For VOA News, I am David Vandy in Washington.
And now time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Yeah. marry, make him shake my brother. Not the family, no baby, before you go for their picking you. Na snake dey boss snake yo. Na snake dey boss snake yo, brother. Na snake dey boss snake yo. Yes, you want to come in one. Yes, you want to move them. Yes, you want to fool the anania. Yeah, I am mama. I am mama. I am mama. I am mama. I'm obedient. Yes, you want my love in Mutakene. Yes, you want my love in Lele. Yes, you want my love in Biairimu. I'm obedient.
And that's our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music.
Peace and love. If you be wife and you not say you good, come and follow me the dance.
Precious woman.
Nene be this yo.
Precious woman.
Nene the dance yo.
Precious woman.
Make the wife noisy to see.
Precious woman.
Yes, in my inner food, the Nanya.
Precious woman.
Yes, in my inner supper, the yo.
Precious woman.
Yes, in the net, and it's so be.
Precious woman.
Mrs. Oka, Makan, it's so be.
Precious woman.
Ogoli, my love, be more.
Precious woman.
Mrs. Sipi, yes, and ba.
Precious woman.
Yes, in my inner food, the Nanya.
Precious woman.
Mrs. Oka, yeah.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Nightline Africa team, producer David Vandy and our engineer tonight, Ken Wang, I thank you for joining us tonight. Join us again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
The genius and professor. Président des démoniaques, Yvan Jolie, les boucliers, Malou, des bosquets, Pichobongo, Soharon, Koka.